listening for Tom Holland speaking for your Savior on this station.
The purpose of my presentation is to show that this nation, this great nation of ours, was built on a religious foundation as shown by our money. And so I'm going to begin. All of you know this person right here, George Washington, called the father of our country. George Washington is remembered by many people because he led the forces many years ago in opposition to the best trained army at the time and the most successful army at the time. And I can almost hear our teacher at school, back in high school, telling us, "By the rude bridge that arched the flood, their flags to April's breeze unfurled. Here once the embattled farmers stood and fired the shot heard round the world." Now, Washington served as the first president of this country. And for him to lead that revolutionary army the way he did to gain a victory over the British is indeed a very interesting thing. Now, Washington, as you know, not only served as the first president, but he was the man that said this nation is to be built on a religious foundation. And so we remember him for that, and we honor him for that. Now we come to another very interesting person. Here he is on a $2 bill, Thomas Jefferson. Thomas Jefferson wrote the Declaration of Independence. And if you remember, he said, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal and endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights. Among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness." Now, where did he get such an idea? Years ago, there was a famous British jurist who wrote what he called was a type of explanation of why we are who we are and why we are. We have to remember, these men didn't have a model to go by to build a new nation. They were becoming the model. And so consequently, they had a lot of things to learn. One thing that they did not want was a nation patterned like the British nation under King George. In fact, in the Declaration, there were some very, I guess you'd say, unfavorable things said about King George. Because of these people, the king and a dictator were synonymous. These people were forming a new kind of nation. They would become, if you please, the model. And so here is this fellow, Thomas Jefferson, writing that Declaration of Independence, holding these truths to be self-evident. Now, the self-evidence comes from this famous jurist, British jurist, who wrote a series of commentaries on British law, and who said repeatedly that we are going to be a nation of laws. If you haven't read the Constitution lately, you might want to read it again and count how many times the word law is used. We're not going to form a nation headed by a dictator. We're going to be a nation guided by laws. And these laws will be formulated by the citizens of this new nation. And so we have here Thomas Jefferson, that Declaration of Independence. It's a marvelous thing to consider. Now we're going to move on to another important person in our history, and this is Abraham Lincoln. We all remember Abraham Lincoln as a person who was guiding this country during that Civil War. And I'm sure most of you remember that during that Civil War, in order to keep people from taking General Robert E. Lee's farm up at Arlington, he called it Arlington, that in order to keep people from respecting that farm, they buried the first person in Mrs. Lee's flower garden so they would never be again using that farm. And we know it today as Arlington Cemetery. All of us have heard about it, and here is where it all started, right here with this person, Abraham Lincoln. Now, we're going to move from Abraham Lincoln over to another very interesting person. Now, take a good look at Alexander Hamilton. This country, the colonists, were trying to decide if they were going to be independent colonists or if there would be a central binding of them together. And so with this man right here, Alexander Hamilton, there was a binding together of the colonists in a type of central government. Now, not everyone really appreciated this kind of movement. And so back in those days, sometimes, you know, people would just settle their differences with what they called a duel. And this man right here, Alexander Hamilton, was the fellow who had said some uncomplimentary things about a certain fellow, and ended up, they decided they would settle it. And so consequently, they had that duel, and we all know what happened in that particular thing. So in all of our money and on all of our coins, you're going to find this expression, "In God we trust." It's here. It's on all of them. "In God we trust." We're not going to be trusting men. We're going to be trusting God. I don't know how you feel about it, but I am very happy that I live in a land that is not ashamed to put on its money, on its coins, "In God we trust." Naturally, there have been a lot of efforts made to change the Constitution, to make of us a kind of nation that people want, instead of trying to become a kind of nation that will honor and respect God. Now, on some tags today, I know in Alabama, they put on the tag, "In God we trust." And while a lot of people resent this, and they've tried to change everything from the Constitution to you name it, I am originally from Alabama, and I am glad that in addition to a football team, if you haven't heard about that, in addition to that, we do have this idea, in God we trust. Now, we're moving on to, and I have to be real careful about this one, we're moving on to this individual right here. This is a man that I think all of us have heard about, and he's gotten some bad press, but he has a very important place in the history of this great land. One of the reasons that Andrew Jackson got some bad press is because of the Trail of Tears. We've all heard about the Trail of Tears. And what a lot of people don't know about the background of this man right here, the British started sending rifles over to the Indians, and consequently a lot of the colonists were being murdered by the Indians. And so this man's remedy for it was simply to move them, move the people out to another place. And he chose as that place Oklahoma, if you remember. Out from Florence, Alabama, just before you get to the interstate, you will find a unique type of monument by a man whose great-great-grandmother was a part of the so-called Trail of Tears. And Andrew Jackson, not only had to deal with that problem of the Indians being armed and killing people in that part of the country, but he had to deal with the problem of what will we do with these people. And the decision was, we will move them to Oklahoma. And so it started. I never knew until just relatively recently, a few years ago, that Alabama had been a part of the requirement of the Indians to leave that part of the country. I visited what this man said was a monument. If you go out from Florence, Alabama, just before you get to the interstate, you will find what he said was going to be a monument. It's just a collection of rocks from that part of the country. The fella, I talked to him, he had spent several years hauling those rocks, had worn out one or two pickup trucks, and I forget how many pair of leather gloves. But something had to be done to stop these people from murdering the colonists. And however you might disagree with the remedy, that was the remedy. And I was fascinated to talk to this fellow that's built that kind of memorial. I guess memorial would be better. Just, I couldn't tell you. I would say probably about 4 football lengths of rocks, about 4 to 5 feet high, that he has collected. Now, an interesting thing to me was the fact that his great-great-great-grandmother had walked back to that area near Florence, Alabama, from Oklahoma. Took her 2 years, but she walked back. So my question to him, why didn't they send her back? He said she was an herb doctor, and people in that area would come to her to be healed of their various ailments. So they were not going to send her back. And they didn't. Now, in that, I'm calling it a memorial, you will see that there is one little area where the rocks are a little different. Of course, I wanted to know about that. He said, well, there was a little 12-year-old Indian girl up in the Smoky Mountains, and I wanted her in this memorial. And I made request if they would please let me have her to put in this memorial. I would deeply appreciate it. And that they did. But it amazed me. For 2 years, that woman walked back to what had been her home. So I think about this man here getting some bad press because of the way he supposedly treated the Indians, shipping them out like that. But something had to be done, and Andrew Jackson, that was his remedy. Okay, now moving on to days of the war, the Civil War, and here he is, U.S. Grant, and we all know he was a prominent general in the Civil War. And so consequently, he is remembered here. And again, in God we trust. I tell you folks, it's on our money and it's on our coins, because we have every reason to remember these people and to be grateful for what they did. So I think about Grant and that unfortunate situation that has been labeled a civil war. Brothers against brothers. Friends against friends. Families torn apart. Tears shed. It was, in one sense, an uncivil war. But here was a man that was very prominent in the war. U.S. Grant. And he's right here remembered with this coin, this money, in God we trust. Now I come to a very interesting situation. The next person I'm going to introduce to you was never a president. So far as I know, was never a soldier in any of the wars. But this person gave a request at a meeting of some of the, we were way back in the colonies now, gave a request, or I guess a recommendation. He said, if a sparrow cannot fall without that being recognized, do we imagine that a country can be built without a recognition of Almighty God? And he said, you know, we would be, when we were in the process of trying to form this new nation, we would start every session with prayer. Every session we would praying for the help of Almighty God. Those people that formed this country knew we are building on a religious foundation. And that really is the purpose of my presentation, to say our country was built on a religious foundation. You could take that all the way back to George Washington, who recognized it. You can bring it all the way down, I would like to say, even to this present time. And so what this person did he recommended that each session should begin with prayer. Now, when I was preaching for the East, for the church in Nashville, I was invited a number of times to be what they call chaplain of the day. And so far as I know, they still have this. And the man responsible for that, like I said, was never elected president. But he's this man right here, who said, if God recognizes the fall of a sparrow, can we imagine that he would not recognize the rise of a nation? And so what we need to do, we need to start each of our sessions with prayer to God. This man right here. And like I said, when I was working in Nashville for the congregation there at Creve Hall, several times I was invited to come down and be what they call it, chaplain of the day. And so, you go. And one time, they wanted to be chaplain of both the Senate and the House. So I did, I think I did the House first, and they waited down at the Senate so I could go down and be chaplain of the day down there. Now, folks, I am affirming that this nation called the United States of America was initially built on a religious foundation. And that is exactly the reason that we honor this man right here. I don't know about you, but I am grateful to God that I live in this kind of nation. And at this point in my life, when I know that most of my life, I hope not all of it, I pray the Hezekiah prayer. I have prayed fervently the Hezekiah prayer. And if you remember, God gave him 15 more years. I don't know how many more years God will give me, but I know this much. I want to use them as best I can to the glory of God. And my prayer for this presentation has been that it would be to the glory of God. People have asked me, when do you have time to write books? Well, after my first surgery was to cut off bones that were pushing against my spinal cord. And so I'd get down, I'd give the signal, get up, and I couldn't get up. I'd have to crawl through the grass to a little bush and pull up. But they did surgery and cut those bones off. And then I had to have surgery because I fell and broke a hip. More surgery. But I tell you, folks, through the providence of God and a good doctor, Dr. Richard Martin, and the prayers of God's people, the old man's still going. I remember a time in my life when I thought an 86-year-old man was over the hill. You know what? They really are. I've lived to demonstrate that that's exactly the way that it is. But I think about all the wars that have been fought, all of the suffering that has been experienced. And so far as I know, men will still be fighting wars. People will still be suffering and dying. And it's happening constantly. And all of you know the little fella in North Korea that claims he's going to be able to bomb us with atomic bombs. Now, if you have trouble believing in the providence of God, I could give you some things that might make you believe in it. For example, when I think about all of the efforts that have been made to change this country, and even the potential. Now, I seldom listen to the news. I call it the blues, because I have something better for my life, and I simply mention this to challenge you. 44 years ago, I resolved that I would read my Bible through every year. And personally, I'd a lot rather be back in my room reading my Bible than listening to what I call the blues on the news. One old gentleman over in East Tennessee is reported to have said, if I did nothing but listen to the news on television and read it in the paper, I'd shoot myself. Well, I listened to a speech that was made. Now, this is going to date it. It was a speech made many, many years ago by a popular radio announcer named Paul Harvey. Any of you remember Paul Harvey? Well, I listened to a speech made by Paul Harvey. And he was talking about people wanting to change our country, wanting to change our way of life. He said, what we need to do is resolve to be the best citizens that we can be in this country. And I say there should be no better citizens in the United States of America than God's people. We ought to be the best citizens that this country has. And I tell people too, and I didn't coin this expression, but one fellow said, you know, I'm going to be the type of person that'll never go to work again. There was an old song that said, learn to love your work and you will never go to work again. I have to tell you that I love what I do. I absolutely love it. And however many more years God gives me, I'm going to devote them. What I've tried to do is to make plans to keep serving the Lord after I'm going to be with Him. That's why I've written all those books. And people ask me, when do you have time to write books? Well, I'll give you an example. When I was in rehabilitation following, I forget what, had so many surgeries, I had some time to write. And so I'd write books. I was upgrading a book one time about 2 o'clock in the morning, and I just put a little note down at the bottom. People have asked me, when do you have time to write books? I said, right now it's 2:30 in the morning. Does that answer your question? But you learn to love your work, you'll never go to work again. And I think about this church and how good this church has been to me for many, many years. I came, I guess, for one of my first meetings to East Main when I was teaching at Fried Hartman. And I was impressed then at how gracious you people are here, how nice you are. And personally, I believe you are rendering a great service to the cause of Christ by having this particular session that you have. And I urge that we keep it going. So if God sees the fall of a sparrow, do we vainly imagine that a nation can rise without his help. Now, if you have trouble believing in the providence of God, I have been blessed the past several years to be actively involved. I wanted to do some mission work, and I found out I was on a program in Montgomery, Alabama, that I could go to Guyana, and I could not have to go through the ordeal of learning another language. I'd been through that ordeal up at Southern Illinois University. Didn't want to go through that ordeal again. So I signed up to go down and work in Western Guyana. Now, we have to fly across the jungle from Georgetown over on the eastern side to get over to where we work in the western side. And I tell people, if you get behind on your praying, fly that, what they call, I think, the airline, that Guyana airline. Sometimes they don't even have a co-pilot. It's one pilot flying across the jungle. If you get behind on your praying, you'll catch up. I promise, on that one flight. But I still serve as best I can as president of that Guyana University. We, back in 2005, a lot of brethren went with me. Maybe some of you were on that trip when we went down and I held a tent meeting, and we had all those people that were baptized. And so consequently, we started a school, and we felt it'd be a lot cheaper to come here and train these fellows than to bring them to America. So we started doing that. And I don't know how much longer I'll be able to serve as the president of what they call Guyana Christian University, but as long as God gives me strength, I plan to do that and be grateful for the opportunity. So out of that tent meeting, with all of those people, I think there are 59 people were baptized, mostly adults, out of that tent meeting came this school, Guyana Christian University. And it's by joy. They wanted, I was a school man, having taught at Fred Hardeman and so forth in Lipscomb, and they wanted me to be the president of that school. And so consequently, that's what I do. I'm going to tell you one quick story. Do I have time for one quick story? I'm going to tell you one quick story. I wanted for us to have over in Western Guyana what they've had for a long time over in Georgetown. And that is, they've had good medical attention and good doctors. And so I wanted us to have that over in Western Guyana. And I was trying to raise the funds to get it done. And fortunate, there was a family in Alabama that had remembered my work in the settling of their estate. They didn't have any children. And I needed $37,000 to complete building a clinic where American doctors would go down once a week and doctor people at no cost. Folks didn't have the money. But I lacked $37,000. A lady called me because one day, just kind of out of the blue, $10,000 check fell down for me. And I had written a thank you note and told them I was going to use 5 of it to help train preachers at Fred Hardeman through a scholarship. And then I'd give the other 5 to try to encourage people to come down and help these poor people who have a clinic. This lady phoned me and said, I just found your letter thanking me for the $10,000. So I'm sending you a check tomorrow. They'll just about settle this estate. Nothing was said about money. Zero. So I go to the mail in about 3 days, and I've got a check. I needed $37,000. I had a check, $37,000. Now that's a true story. And that's one of the reasons I believe in the providence of God. And I know you do too.